afternoon, I picked up from my mailbox the strangest looking letter I'd ever seen. A chilling little envelope bordered with flying bats and eerie serpents whose eyes were tinted green. The letter was addressed to me, so as I opened it, I froze. What I read turned my complexion three shades of blue. It said, "My name is Isaac Horowitz. I'm a male witch, a warlock, and I feel I need to spend some time with you." Now, as a Christian from a little church with God's call on my life, a man of faith and power with a challenge to grow, I did what any saint would do in my situation. I tore it up, said, "Lord, no way I'm gonna go." Then gently and methodically, the Holy Spirit spoke and reminded me, we're God's voice to our nation. It's the church's responsibility to witness. So reluctantly, I accepted this witch's invitation. He had the house you'd expect, the old English cottage, a Nightmare on Elm Street special right to the core, the overgrown ivy, the gate that creaked when opened. Somehow you'd expect Freddy to answer this door. The doorbell rang, a hollow gong, the knob twisted, then opened, and Isaac stood before me with a grin. His jet black hair and well-trimmed beard flowed with his black silk clothes. My skin crawled as he said, "Please, come on in." His house was filled with every occultic symbol you could fathom. Hanging pentagrams, horoscope signs, a Ouija board and Dungeons and Dragons games set on the table. Crystal ball with an incandescent shine. And graciously, he handed me some steaming herbal tea. Its presence caused my memory to jog. I thought of every horror flick I'd seen when I was a kid and thought, man, you drink this stuff, next day you'll be a frog. And he led me to a high back chair as he meticulously began to unfold his scenario with equal patience. I was given a giant leather-bound book jammed with newspaper clippings, thus the reason for this witch's invitation. With eagerness, he pointed to each article with pride. He said, "I healed this woman through a Babylonian chant. You see, this man, I cured him while performing druid worship. I was paid to curse this man with AIDS by his aunt." On and on, page after page, delightfully he flaunted each incident for an hour without a breath. He said, "Do you realize through my understanding of the dark regions that I can make you rich or even curse someone to death?" I sat literally intimidated by his immensity and demon power, while his face shone with a satanic arrogant bliss. Then placing his hands on the arms of my chair and leaning into my face, he said, "What can your God do to compete with this?" I knew then how Moses felt when his rod turned to a serpent, and the three Egyptian magicians did the same. It's as if you're sitting there in that stunned moment where your faith gets violated and all you feel is weak, powerless, and lame. I desperately and deeply prayed, saying, "Jesus, give me wisdom. I don't want to put you through some foolish test." Then a shaft of light shot through my soul, igniting my eyes with fire. God stood me up, and I threw the book back in his chest. I said, "Isaac, I'll not compare God's miracles versus Satan's. The issue's not God's kingdom and Satan's lair. The real comparison is the condition of your soul and the condition of mine, and you puppet of the devil, that I will compare." I said, "My friend, one day they're coming for you. the soft associates in your incantations, the friendly demons you think you now control. The time will come when you'll be lying in bed, wheezing like a dying animal, when those spirits lay claim to the rights they own to your soul. Then the room will grow dark, and the most hideous evil faces you've ever seen will come flaming out of the floor with a yell. The vile informants that promised reincarnation will claw your spirit and victoriously drag your soul to hell. Then I grab the book and says, in that moment, which mantra, which incantation are you gonna chant to tell them to leave you alone? I said, my friend, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt what I would say. I am bought with the blood of Jesus. Let me go. I said, Isaac, when you tossed that book in my lap, you gloated with a sinister victory. You rejoiced when you saw your name in black and white. Now I rejoice, but not that your council of demons are subject to Jesus, but that my name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Then Isaac jumped up from his chair and screamed, "You must leave now!" I said, "I will, but one last obligation. Next time, think twice before you rumble with a man of God. By the way, thanks for your witch's invitation."
And welcome to Rock Talk here on M88, and thanks for joining us. The show where we want to challenge, encourage you, and of course, most of all, get you to think. And that's especially what we're going to do tonight. What with Halloween right around the corner, I thought this would be a good time to talk about a little bit of witchcraft. And that story that you just heard, that is a song that's actually done by Carmen, a song that had a big impact on my life a long time ago, is actually based on actual events. These things happen. Witchcraft is out there. And as Christians, we need to know how to face it. We need to know how to stand strong and stand in the face of it. But you know what? I don't know if we all know as much about witchcraft or Wicca as much as we probably should. Not that I'm saying that we should be obsessed with it, but we should at least have a functioning knowledge of it so that we can properly defend ourselves when it comes to Christianity. So I decided, why not bring in an expert? And I have with me Tammy, who used to be a part of the Wiccan religion, if you can call it that. Would you call it a religion?
Yeah, I would call it a religion.
Part of the Wiccan religion, and she is now a Christian, and I thought, you know, that's just fascinating in its own right, and you don't hear that happening a whole lot. And so I thought we'd have you come in and talk a little bit about what the whole deal is with this Wicca thing. Now, if you have questions for Tammy, if you'd like to call in, voice your opinion, and get some questions answered, you can do that, of course, here on Raw Talk, 505-338-5790 for your questions about Wicca. And I want to start off, first of all, Tammy, by asking you what drew you to Wicca, because I think, you know, that would be an important thing to go over, because if you've listened to Steve Russo, who does Real Answers and whatnot, he really thinks that this is one of the fastest growing religions among teenagers, that there's something here that appeals especially to teenagers, to college students, that that they just find really appealing. It's like moss to a flame. So what drew you to Wicca?
Well, in a way, I was raised in it, but in a way, I was not. Most Wiccans today will claim to be raised in it when, in fact, they're not. But for me, my parents were both scientists. They were both evolutionists. They were both very much involved in the environmental movement. They had a lot to do with the inception of Earth Day with Selena Fox, who was, last I knew, the Dean of Religious Studies at the University of Wisconsin. To say that I was raised in it would be partially true and partially not true, because my parents are not Wiccans. They never have been. They don't want to be. But at the same time, their friends are. And their friends had a great deal of influence in my life. What I was looking for, and what I believe that most people who get involved in it are looking for, is power. Power over something, be it themselves, be it another person, be it a group of other people, or be it over the world around them, which has in some way hurt them. They want a way to control it so that, and this is what I wanted, so that it doesn't hurt anymore. I wanted to escape the pain. What I didn't know was Yeshua, otherwise known as Jesus, and who he is, what he does. I was not raised in the church. I had no real knowledge of the Bible. I had no real understanding that the Bible does not contradict itself. I did not understand a great deal about it because I was not raised with it. When I found out about it and it became explained to me who and what Jesus is and what he was all about, what he did, why he did it, and I understood the concept of sin, which was not something I was raised with, then it became clear and it was a very easy transition.
All right. Well, and I like how you bring up that whole idea of the concept of sin, that when we did the debate with Scott Lamont and Scott Richards, that was something that came up, you know, how Wicca, there was no concept of sin with paganism.
That's
you
true.
Know, there's no need for that and so on and so forth. And for me, when I was listening to them talk about Christianity versus paganism, the thing that struck me the most was there's just nothing substantial to paganistic beliefs. It's all kind of wishy-washy, kind of very vague.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sounds appealing, but when I was thinking about it, I was like, but how do you know if you're getting anything out of it? If there's no standard to measure anything by, how do I know I'm benefiting from this? Because there's nothing to say that I'm getting anything good out of it, because there's nothing to say that anything's happening at all. And that just boggled my mind.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Primarily, you go by your feelings. And you go by what feels good. Again, that power over situation. You want to have power over something because something has hurt you. And you want to be able to control what's going on. So by doing that, you get rid of the pain. That's the whole idea. That's where I find most of the kids that I talk to today, be it the clerk in Walmart, who is very interesting to talk to, or the person on the other end of the phone at work.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be anybody from across the financial spectrum to across the financial or the political spectrum.
Well, we have our first caller of the night. We have Anna on the line. Am I saying that right? Anna?
Yeah.
Okay, Anna. Welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
I was wondering if it's okay to read books like Harry Potter.
Well, you know, when any time you talk about witchcraft, that question's bound to come up. What do you think, Tammy? Do you have a take on that?
Yeah, I do. Harry Potter, in and of itself, not having read the books, but having seen the movies, two of the three of them, I think there's three, I can tell you that the spells that are in them are not accurate. The Hollywoodized version of it is not accurate. So in a way, no, it's not going to hurt you. But in another way, it's quite deadly. And I mean deadly as in separation from God, as in sin. Because you're following the beginning of a path. When you watch movies like that, you're polluting your mind that has been given over to the Holy Spirit, that has been given over to God. As a Christian, we have done that. You're polluting it by insinuating that material into your, that leaning, that desire, that fantasy, if you will, into your heart and into your mind. And it becomes very hard to get rid of once it's there. In fact, I've known people that have had to go through deliverances from the influences that they have received as a result of that. Does everyone have to go through that? No. Are some people okay with watching it? Yeah, my own kids have watched two of the movies. Did I keep them in the house? No, because once I realized what they were doing, and they were portraying human beings or muggles as being basically the bad guys and those who can do magic, spelled with a C instead of a CK, as most Wiccans and Neo-Pagans and Pagans, etc., spell it, to differentiate between prestidigitation and putting your will over someone else's will in a matter of force. I just lost track of where I was saying. Anyway.
That's all right.
Anyway.
It was good.
Anyway, when you look at what you're putting into your mind, be careful and talk to God first and see from Him if it's okay. That's not a question I can answer for you. That's between you and God. If God tells you no, don't do it. If God tells you yeah and use it as a tool to witness to others, then do what He says. But be sure you know what you're doing and be sure you know what God's telling you to do. And talk with your pastor about it, too.
That's sage advice. Does that help you out, Anna?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for calling in and for joining us here on Rock Talk. And I'm glad you brought up that thing about the spells, because that is like one big sticky contention when it comes. And I'm not turning this into a Harry Potter show. So everyone who has a Harry Potter question now, not so much, okay? We're focusing on other things. But that's one of the big contentions that a lot of people have had. It's like, oh, well, they use real spells, and so be careful. And I've read the books, and I'm like, really? Because if that's all it takes is to do a spell is to make a different play on a word. Wow, that's not very inventive. And so I've always wondered about that, and so thanks for clearing that up. Now, the thing that I found really interesting when I was going through this and I was looking at this was the influence that Wicca seems to be having on teenagers. And the thing that really jumped out at me was that evangelical teenagers, this was something that I got from the Barna group. George Barna does a lot of research, you know, for the church and Christians and whatnot. Anyway, and on his site, the Barna group said evangelical teens were nearly three times less likely than the normal person to have engaged in witchcraft or psychic activities. And I thought that was pretty fascinating that, you know, for evangelical teenagers, that this isn't something they're necessarily as fascinated with. But on the flip side, he had another stat that I thought was really interesting, and that was 28% of church-going teenagers have never been taught anything to help them shape their view of the supernatural world. And on that flip side, I thought, man, that's kind of dangerous to have no help whatsoever in shaping a view of the supernatural world and then sending them off to places like college and whatnot. I think that'd be kind of dangerous. Where did you first encounter Wicca?
When I was about 4 or 5, when Selena Fox came to my house and my parents and two others and her got together and created Earth Day.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I forget who the other two were. I apologize to whoever they are if they're listening. That was when I first heard about it. All through my growing up years, sporadically, I encountered it. And when I was 14, I really became entrenched in it because I had friends that wanted me to create love potions for them or create a potion to heal them or do a spell for this or do a spell for that. I never presented myself as anything other than a witch because I didn't know of myself as anything other than a witch. As far as the number of kids that have not had spiritual training, that's just sad.
Yeah.
That's just sad because the Lord says, be as wise as serpents, but as gentle as doves. I can't think of a better serpent than the one that was in the Garden of Eden.
Amen to that.
And the one that was in the Garden of Eden used doubt, and he used a lot of other trickery to convince Eve, basically witchcraft, to convince Eve to create the first religion, which means to be bound. Religio is the Latin root of religion, and it means to be bound. And God said he came to set the captives free.
Yes, he did. And I'm so glad that he did. Let's talk a little bit about what Wicca really is. Now, I don't know how many of our listeners caught the debate between Scott Richards and Scott Lamont. We had it recently on the UNM campus, and it is available at the M88 MySpace webpage if you want to check that out. It was a very interesting debate, and I tried to approach the debate when I was there as someone who hadn't decided on a quote-unquote spiritual path. You know, I mean, it's hard to be objective when I am a Christian. I've been a Christian all my life. But, you know, I've always, hey, I'll give other people the benefit of the doubt. If you can convince me not to be a Christian, if you can make a good case, go for it. I'm open to that. No one's made a really good case yet, although I made some of my college professors very upset because they thought they had excellent cases. You're just being stubborn. It's like, I'm sorry. Your case isn't, you know, good enough. But so I tried to be objective, and I thought it was really fascinating. And, you know, the thing that I noticed was that, and even Scott Richards, the pastor who was there, you know, said there's a lot of admirable things about Wicca. There's a lot of good stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he was talking, he's like, yeah, that sounds very nice. When I went online to look up, stuff about Wicca, one of the things I came across, I think it was at wicca.com, it says Wicca is a belief system and a way of life based upon the reconstruction of pre-Christian traditions originating in Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. And, it also said, quote, to be a witch is to be a healer, a teacher, a seeker, a giver, and a protector of all things. Well, that sounds just fine. So what's the problem with being a witch? What would you say in response to all the stuff that sounds, you know, very, very nice and sounds like being a witch is very warm, fuzzy, lovey-dovey. We're not here to hurt anyone. That was one of the things I brought up during the debate. No harm.
Okay, four things you covered there.
I know, I'm sorry.
I'm going to see if I can catch them all here. First of all, everything you said is surface.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the inside. I have been a high priestess. I have hived three covens, which means that three covens spurred off of my coven. And there is a great deal that happens in Wicca that is not talked about in public forums. The reason it's not talked about is because if it were, people would fly. They would flee from it left and right. There is blood and metal magic, blood and earth magic, which means you shed blood. Or you shed the blood of another, you shed either your own or someone else's, or something else's. Some people think, oh no, oh my gosh, that's not Wicca, that's Satanism. Well, yeah, your point is. And, okay, to be a witch is a healer, a teacher, a seeker, a giver, a protector of all things. It's also to say that it's a life giver. You know, women give birth. Mm-hmm. Well, God is the source of all life. That could also be a definition of a steward or a doctor or something like that. At what point do you stop doing all of that? At what point do you stop seeking? At what point do you find the truth? At what point do you stop giving? When it harms you, that leads into the next thing, which is the statement which is followed by most Wiccans or pagans or neo-pagans. I'm using the term Wicca to cover all of those.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody who's out there who's listening, just keep that in mind. A neo-pagan, a pagan, a witch is very commonly going to say to you, well, we have the reed which says, "An it harm none, do what thou wilt." That is actually from Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley was known for doing a number of different things. Mostly he was known by his mother. He was called by his mother the Beast, after the Beast of Revelation.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He was that evil when he was a child.
That's not a good nickname, kids.
No. His mother was a pilgrim, which was a religious sect out of England. He was known to influence L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, based on a religion based on a science fiction book. I haven't figured that one out yet.
Look into Star Wars sometimes.
Oh, here's one about Star Wars. The
okay.
Force.
Yeah.
The Force is often referred to in Wicca, and it's commonly thought of in exactly the same way. But have you ever heard of the Force being referred to in a positive way? Not neutral, not negative, but positive. It's always referred to as either neutral, as in being the force be with you, the force do this, the force do that, or the dark side of the force. You never hear of the light side of the force. It's insinuated, it's implied, but it's never outright stated. And the idea is it's left up to the imagination. There's a real major hole there. Okay.
All the Star Wars fans are going to start calling in now.
Well, I've seen all of them. I like them all. I think they're great science fiction stories, but that's all they are.
There you go.
To move on to "And it harm none," that is a statement which comes from Aleister Crowley, who founded, he was one of the friends of Anton LaVey, the founder of Satanism. He was a founder or a friend of Hitler. In fact, he was one of Hitler's teachers and Madame Blavatsky's teachers. He was a teacher and mostly a con man. He conned a lot of old ladies out of a lot of money. Aleister Crowley was a very evil man, and I believe that's where he got his power from, was from the dark side of the force. Let's see. And it harm none. You'll hear that a lot. And it harm none. Well, how can you define harm? what may be harmful to one person may not be harmful to another. How are you supposed to know that? How can you do a spell, be it a love spell or a healing spell or a spell to get rid of the fleas off your dog or whatever? How can you know that you're not going to harm anyone? Inherently, you have no way of knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So because you have no way of knowing, you can't do what you will. So that statement itself is contradictory. You can't live by something that's contradictory. And that contradiction, that is the major contradiction that led me to the Lord.
Hmm.
In fact, because I got saved while sitting in the bathtub, you could say I got saved and baptized all at once. Bad joke.
That's funny, though.
Thank you. There have to be witnesses for it to be a true baptism, and I have been baptized since, but still.
Bathtub baptism.
Yeah, there we go. Witchcraft is sometimes known as wisecraft. It's sometimes known as dritect, which is spelled, for those who want to know, D-R-A-O-I-T-E-C-H-T. Yeah.
You won't get that one in a spelling bee.
Yeah. It's Gaelic, and it's essentially what the Druids study. The Druids are the original witches. If you go back in archaeology far enough, that's where you'll end up. The Druids were primarily Irish, and amongst that time in history when they existed, there were also Angles, Saxon, Norse, Cymru, which is now known as Wales, and a whole slew of other different tribes. But it all goes back to the Druids. That's where it all begins from. The Druids today are more common than you think. In fact, the most recent and most famous Druid was Sir Winston Churchill.
Hmm.
A lot of people are unaware of the fact that he was the last High Druid, which is the last king of the Druids, if you will. The Catholic Church, and this may offend some, and I apologize if it does, but truth is truth. Look it up for yourself. The Catholic Church is based on something that Constantine saw. Constantine was raised by Druids, taught by Druids. He was partially English, partially Northern Italian, which is a form of Celt, Lucarian Celt. He saw a vision over a river, which was kind of like the X-Men symbol, which is something used by Wiccans, only turned so that it was more like a T, and the arms extended out beyond the circle. This was known as the Broken Cross. And he used that as a rallying symbol and put it on the symbol known as now today as the Celtic Cross. He used that in order to rally the troops behind him. And then the Councils of Nicaea came along and all that kind of thing. And lo and behold, the Catholic Church was born. A lot of history there. My apologies.
Yeah, and let me just ask, because I know, and this is in my nature too, and I'm sure there's people listening who it's in their nature as well. Where would they go to look this type of stuff up to say, well, I hear what she's saying, but man, where is that written down? I mean, where would people go? You know, because it's the journalist in me. I'm big, cite your source. Like, anytime I hear something like, really? That's outrageous. What's your source?
I started with the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I went through a version that's modern. I went through a version from the 50s. I went through a version from the 60s. And some of it I learned from talking with professors on the internet from Austria. A friend of mine is the professor of Gaelic studies in Austria. For the University of Austria, and he just recently came back from Germany, where he was studying some Norse things, trying to see if they matched up with some Celtic things that he knew about. He's very interested in the Las Lunas stone, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we'll get into that another time. Right now we have Tara on the line. Tara, welcome to Raw Talk, and what do you have to say?
We'll have a couple questions.
Okay.
For the lady, I forget her name, I'm sorry.
Her name is Tammy.
Tammy, do you have any personal experiences of something, I guess, bad? Obviously, anti-God. And then what is the difference? Because a lot of people, when I was in high school, said, oh, I'm a witch, but I'm a white witch. I do white magic, not magic. Which, yes, is completely ridiculous.
you got to laugh there. Good job, Tara.
Yeah.
Okay. Some things that were anti-God. Well, the first one that comes to mind is what happened to me shortly after I was saved. My ex-husband and I were woken up in the middle of the night, and we were woken up by something at the same time. We don't know what it was, but we saw a bunch of lights coming from inside the living room. Now, normally, where we lived, it was not too far from a prison. That would mean, okay, well, there's helicopters searching for a prisoner. Time to lock down the house, make sure the kids are okay, that kind of thing. Somebody escaped. Well, there was only one problem. The lights were not coming from outside. They were coming from inside. And as we walked into the living room, the essence of fear was there. There was a sense of evil which was extraordinary. And it centered in the middle of the living room where we had performed our circles. And we prayed, and it went away. As soon as I ordered it away, it went away, and it never came back. That was the very most striking thing that I can remember that comes to mind. There were many other things that were anti-God. For example, in the Wiccan movement, we went to see a number of different entertainers. One of them tried to rape one of my children.
Oh, my gracious.
Yeah, I would not call that, and it harm none, do what you will. Unless, of course, he thought that wouldn't harm my daughter. I would call that harm. As far as white witchcraft, you'll hear white, black, gray, whatever color you want to call it. The bottom line is witchcraft is witchcraft. It is power over something. Mm-hmm. There is no way to commit power over something without harming it. Now, the person that you're talking about that's claiming to be a white witch, this is actually a good sign. The reason I would say that is that this person is inexperienced. They have not gotten very deeply into it at this mm-hmm. point, which means that it's going to be much easier to witness to them.
Well, that was high school 4 years ago, so I'm unfortunate.
Well, if you still keep in touch with that person,
mm-hmm.
Share with them the fact that Wicca has a lot of inherent contradictions. And mm-hmm. if they're a seeker of the truth is not going to have any contradictions.
Right.
So begin there and speak to their heart. Try to get past the intellectual blockages that they've set up, because they all do.
Mm-hmm.
And something I've noticed as a pattern, the more intelligent a person is, the more likely they are to fall into it deeper and deeper and deeper and keep going. I don't know why. I've just noticed it's a consistent pattern.
Really? I think that would be a contradiction, because when I was listening to, if you don't mind me jumping in, Tara, when I was listening to that debate between, you know, a pastor and a paganist, you know, I couldn't help but think, man, Christianity sounds really intelligent the
it
way
is.
that Scott Richards was presenting it. Whereas what Scott Lamont was saying sounded like a bunch of old wives' tales.
You're right.
Fairy tales. And for me, and
belief
I'm not
is
trying to...
logical. The person is intelligent. What they're believing is not necessarily intelligent.
True. Well, I hope that helps you out, Tara. Does that help you out?
Actually, yeah, it does. But I would just wanted to share something. I called the other time and they said to call today.
Okay.
I'm doing. I was 11 years old and I used to play with the Ouija board.
Mm.
Now I played by myself. Now I was just curious. And I would always, I made the wise choice, if that could be said, of playing with a Ouija board, of asking questions that the answer, no matter what the answer was, it was okay. Now, once I was playing, my brother and mother were in the other room, broad daylight. You know, some people think, oh, evil comes out at night, this, such, that, and the
mm-hmm.
other.
Mm-mm.
No. I was playing on the couch, and so I asked the question. I do not remember what it was, but somebody, I would assume a demon, grabbed my wrist, and I flew across the couch.
Hmm.
Yep.
It just grabbed, and it was so strong. It just vroom, took me, and I was scared to death.
Good.
And that was just a child's simple curiosity and and I was taken. So I'd like to warn people against any little curiosity or something that's questionable, because there are spiritual battles going on that we are can be unaware of.
You're absolutely right, Tara, and I thank you for bringing that up. Thanks for joining us here on Raw Talk, all right? All right, thanks. You know, a couple of weeks ago we had a guest who was talking about psychics, mediums, and mm-hmm. ghost phenomena. And one of the things I thought was really fascinating that came out of that will always stick with me is he said the Ouija board is perhaps one of the most dangerous occultic things
yep.
that you can get into. Even people who are involved with psychic phenomenon and are who are mediums, who are psychics, warn people
yep.
not to dabble with it. And that blew my mind when I heard that if these
yep.
psychics who deal with this type of spiritual stuff all the time are afraid and warn people not to dabble with a Ouija board, why in the world is it at Toys R Us?
Also, the Zaria board and a variety of other ones that are basically Ouija boards by another name,
mm-hmm.
same thing. Tara, I don't want you to misinterpret what I said when I said good, that you were scared. It's not good that you were scared, but it is good that you were scared because it's kept you from it since then.
Yeah.
It's not good that you were scared because nobody deserves to be scared. But at the same time, a Ouija board is incredibly dangerous. It is one of the first things that people do in order to contact the dead. God speaks specifically against that. Another one is a crystal ball. Another one is concentrating on a candle flame. Sometimes people will use what's known as a glamour, where they stare into a mirror with candles and incense and other things and try to change the way they look because they don't like the way they look. There's all different kinds of spells that you can do. I can tell you this. I dye my hair now because I did an awful lot of that, and I'm now completely gray. It takes something out of you when you do that. I'm glad that God was there to protect you so that you were not physically hurt. I'm sorry that it scared you, but I'm glad that it did, because that means that you're not there anymore, and maybe you've warned other people like you just did.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't emphasize enough, you know, we need to be smart about this, but at the same time, not obsessed about it. And I'm hoping that as we go through this tonight, you know, people are like, oh, well, I need to be aware. But, you know, the warning for me always is be aware, but don't go too far. I mean, this is not stuff that we necessarily need to dabble with on ourselves. I've often heard from various pastors, you know, when Satan comes knocking at the door in whatever form that may be, the best thing to do, have Jesus answer the door. You don't need to go.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need to go and try and tangle with that yourself. We have James on the line. James, welcome to Raw Talk. And what do you have to say?
Well, I got two things. One question for you, Tammy. When you were talking about Constantine, so one thing I learned when I was going through Bible college to become a youth pastor was that, and I don't know if you realize it or not, but before Constantine started the Catholic Church, he was born again and left the Druid practices behind.
There's also stories that he was born again either just slightly before he died on his deathbed, and stories that he was born again afterwards. There's also stories that he was baptized on his deathbed, and stories that he was baptized just after he died. It depends on which source you want to go with. I hope and I pray that he was born again before he started the Catholic Church and before he started the wars and before he took part in everything that he did. I hope that of anybody.
Mm-hmm. And then also the other question I want to know is, you as you used to be a high priestess. Just curious, I used to dabble around with black magic and so on. Did you ever have any experience with looking behind the curtain?
Yes, I did.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Why don't you explain for people who don't know what that means exactly what you guys are talking about?
Well...
Which person?
Tammy, if you don't mind there, James.
Looking behind the curtain is referred to by bikers as one thing, by Wiccans as one thing, by Christians as another thing, by Messianic Jewish or Jewish as different things. So it really depends on which way you want to look at it. The way that I looked at it then is different from the way I look at it now as a Messianic Jew. The way that I looked at it then was basically what was known as the underground voyage. The trip through the underground was basically going and meeting the goddess and incorporating her into my body and into my mind and utilizing her power to do my will. Now, obviously, the goddess is a demon, but I didn't know that. Is that what you're referring to?
No, actually, the way that we did it was look behind the curtain to between the world of our world and the spiritual world, and took it to the volume of the place where all I could see was demons and angels around everything and around anyone. And even to this day, I can't get rid of that. You know, I'm a Christian, born again Christian, and you know, I just think that's what maybe one of the consequences I have to pay for that. But you know, even to this day, I see that, and it's just seeing the demons and angels and all that stuff.
That is not a consequence you have to pay. It is not. And I don't want you to think that you ever do have to do that. That is, there's two parts to that. One is having a certain amount of insight that you gain as a result of doing a great deal of magic. That is part that you can't get rid of. Sometimes you do see demons. I see them. I've never seen a non-fallen angel. I have always seen fallen angels, but I've never seen a non-fallen angel. But at the same time, deliverance, it took me over a year of working with two very special ladies whom I treasure to this day to get rid of all the different critters that I had adopted and to figure out who they were, what they were, well, not who they were, who cares who they are, what they were and what they did, and to pray and pray and pray with them, guided, and to make sure that my family was protected, because the children are affected by our iniquities. It matters. You don't have to suffer. There is hope. God came to set you free. Accept that.
Oh, I think I might have explained it wrong. I'm not suffering, as I probably used the wrong word. Because, you know, the most of what I see now is, you know, angels. I never saw angels until I got saved. But, and it's a blessing to see, you know, angels. And it's bad when I see, you know, the fallen angels and so on and so forth. But, you know, just something I got to live with, you know, and it's okay. You know, I know that God protects me and so on and so forth, you know.
Well, thanks a lot, James, man. I appreciate you calling in and joining us tonight here in Rock Talk. We got some more calls, so we're going to move on, all right? All right. Next up, we have Geraldine on the line. Geraldine, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I have a couple questions.
Okay.
The first one for Tammy is, before you became a Christian, did you ever experience anything, you know, having to do with demons or, you know, with what you're doing as a Wiccan that truly frightened you or, you know, kind of like just really scared you or...
I would have to say that fear was not something I expected. I had far more positive, or what I interpreted as being positive, experiences than I did frightening ones. There were two frightening ones that I had. One was when I was about six, where some disembodied faces, all male, all elderly, appeared on in front of my closet doors, and they were discussing me and my future and what they were going to do with me, and being a six-year-old child in the middle of 20 acres of woods and having no parents around, no nothing. I'm an only child, so I have no brothers or sisters. I was all alone. My parents were off partying. Remember, this is back in the 60s. my parents were hippies. Being there all alone and not having anyone there to help me out, I would say, yeah, that frightened the you know what out of me. The next one was much later. I was 23, 24, 25, somewhere in that area, a few decades ago. Let's see, and enough that I'm not going to tell you. let's see, I was laying on my couch. I had just divorced my first husband, and I had a headache, and I decided that I was going to go into a low trance in order to get rid of the headache by lowering my blood pressure and working with the physiology of my body, and the autonomic and the sympathetic nervous system, and trying to get rid of the headache. And as I was laying there, it was very interesting. It's very hard to describe, but I'll do my best for you. I felt two hands, and I could visualize them very clearly, reach into the top of my head and lift my head and my upper body. They reached all the way down to my shoulders, and they lifted me up out of my body. And it was a very tingly sort of experience. And I wasn't frightened at that point, but something in me, and I am convinced that it was God, said, no, no, you're not going to. No, no, you are not going to. This child is mine. Now put her back down. And the hands put me back down. And then I could see a battle going on above my head. And I finally said, okay, enough is enough. I'm getting up. I got up and passed out. I got up too quickly, and my blood pressure was still pretty low. And when I woke up a little bit later, it was all over with. And I wondered, is that really real? Did that really happen? And I was like, nah, I couldn't have been. But it was awfully real. Well, who knows? About a week later, Wiccan that I knew, who I found out later was a Satanist as well. The two are not incompatible, as most Wiccans and Satanists will tell you. Came up to me, and he said, so how'd it go the other day? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I cast a spell, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, you got the benefit of it. And he proceeded to tell me exactly what happened. I had not told him beforehand, but he knew.
So from those experiences, I mean, didn't they ever, you know, make you want to get out of that, you know, I guess, like, living that life, you know, and having an open door to these demonic spirits? I mean, you know, did it ever scare you enough to where you considered leaving that, or?
No.
Did you just, no?
No, it didn't. I didn't consider it a demon. It didn't occur to me at the time that it was a demon or that they were demons. What I thought they were was ghosts or some kind of spirit, and I thought it was interesting, not much more than interesting, but interesting that they would have a fight over me. And it really actually made me mad. I became very angry that someone would cast a spell that would cause something like this to happen, and I began a spiritual battle with this person. Of course, we all know what happens when one demon fights another. That's what witchcraft is, by the way. It's demons. It's not us. We don't have the ability to control matter, to do things like cast a spell. What we're doing is we're inviting a demon to come in and do something. Mm-hmm. That's where the power comes from. Did it frighten me enough? No, it made me mad. Mm-hmm. How dare he?
Well, does that answer your question, Geraldine?
Yeah, I just had one more.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, how does the, I guess, how, when you're a Wiccan, how did you view Christians? Like, I mean, being one now and looking back, what was your point of view as far as Christianity went? I mean, were we seen as the enemy? Were we, you know, was there any real feelings of harm towards a Christian?
Very interesting question.
That is a good question. I like that question. In one respect, never thought of harm towards them, just considered them another part of the world. They were there. They had their own belief system. That was fine with me. And it harmed none. Do what you want. They can do what they want. They have the right. This is America, after all. But at the same time, I remember having a dead snake put in my mailbox by Christians. I remember getting my tires slashed. My car was spray painted with Die Witch Die. Whole bunch of different things. Lots of different things happen. again, did it frighten me? No. It made me mad. How did I view Christians? I viewed them as being, the majority of them, very mixed up as a group. Very mixed up, because you had one group saying one thing, another group saying another, always fighting amongst themselves, couldn't make up their mind. Their own God said to do something that none of them did. They all looked at me as being, this is the way I viewed it now. This is not, I realize today, the truth, but the way I viewed it was, they all looked at me as being something hideous and something to be considered vile. I was really afraid of being stoned, to be honest with you.
Well, that is what the Bible says.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I have had rocks thrown at me.
Okay. Well, I've had rocks thrown at me too.
I've also been, because I am a very outspoken person, I've also been literally kicked in the rumpus out of a church by a pastor, because I dared to open up my mouth at Halloween and say, excuse me, but why are you celebrating Halloween? Little things like that. What can I say? I'm a controversial person, so I'm not afraid of controversy.
Geraldine, I hope that answers your question. I want to cover a couple more things here before we wrap up, so we're going to move on. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Geraldine, for calling in and joining us here on Raw Talk. Okay, you brought up Halloween, which is part of the reason why I brought you in. And so let's cover this. We got about 9 minutes here. And just really quickly, talk about this whole thing about Halloween, and especially from a Christian perspective. What should Christians do with Halloween? It's a nonstop debate.
Okay. Well, throwing myself into the thick of things.
Let's do that.
My stance for my family, and I cannot speak for anyone else, my stance for my family as the protector of my family, being a single parent of four kids, and I apologize, yes, I know two of you are adults, is that it is not right for my family to participate in any fall festivals except for Sukkot, except for the High Holy Days. The reason that I say that is that it is a dangerous stumbling block for my family because of our history. I have participated in circles. I have participated in drawing down the moon. I have had demons inside me. Anything related to this, be it something as simple as a fall festival, is dangerous for my family. Therefore, we do not participate in it. We don't even give out tracts. I try to get them out away from the house on Halloween, or we shut the house up and watch movies, something like that. We don't even watch TV because there's too much stuff on television that is just plain dangerous for us. Most Christians nowadays recognize, I think, that Halloween is not a good thing. Do they recognize Christmas and Easter the same way? No. But are they originally Christian holidays? No.
And that's a debate for another Raw Talk, people. Be listening close to Christmas, and we might get into that.
Yeah. The reason we went into Messianic Judaism is because it does not do those things. Therefore, it was safer for my family. It was more of a protected place for my family. Some of my kids are making their own decisions now, and being adults, that's their right. I hope they make the right ones. Halloween, in its originality, is entirely druidic. It used to be that trick-or-treat was the druids going from home to home, looking for the firstborn child, and they would mark the house with an X with lime, if the parents would not give up their firstborn child to be walked through the fires. You'll hear about that in the Bible, in the Old Testament, walking through the fires. That is not fire walking. They're two different things. Although the demons could be the same. Walking through the fires is, or passing through the fires, is basically burning your firstborn child to death. It is human sacrifice. And the druids would go from house to house looking for the firstborn child in order to do that, to appease the fertility gods. Is this something that the Wiccans of today like to admit to? No. Is the wickerwork man a real thing? You betcha. You betcha. Were the druids a very, by today's standards, disgusting practice? Did they have disgusting practices? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Some of them are so disgusting, I won't even say them.
Yeah, that's good. Let's not do that.
Is it something that some people want to redeem? Yeah. But I would have to ask, do we as humans have the ability to redeem anything? Or is that God's job? And if God's going to do it, wouldn't it be better to simply stay out of it and take a stand to stay out of it than to invite people in saying, oh, it's just a fall festival. Oh, it's just Christmas. Oh, it's just Easter. We're going to celebrate this. And you're lying to them to begin with. You're starting with a deception and then inviting them in and then telling them the truth. How can you witness to someone when you've already begun by lying to them?
Very good point. Never thought of it that way before. We got a couple minutes here, and so I just kind of want to wrap things up on, you know, because we've talked about some spooky stuff here tonight. And again, you know, we've had a couple shows this month where we've talked about the reality of the spiritual realm, the reality of evil spiritual forces. I mean, you got to be aware of it. And if you're not, you're going to be a pawn. I mean, if you're not aware of what's going on in the spiritual realm, you're going to be a pawn of what's going on, and no one wants to be a pawn. They're usually the first to be sacrificed, especially in chess. Not that I play chess. I'm not smart enough to play chess, but I've watched people play chess. But the thing I want to leave everyone with, and you can chime in with this as well, Tammy, is, you know, when Jesus was talking about a lot of stuff towards the end of his ministry, one of the things that he said that, you know, you hear quoted all the time, and often familiarity breeds indifference. But this is very important. In John chapter 16, verse 33, it says, I have told you these things so that you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. And I've always taken heart in that verse, especially when it comes to all the stuff about witchcraft and demons and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Because, you know what? All those things are very much of this world. Who is the prince of this world? Satan is the prince of this world. When Jesus was tempted and Satan said, look, here are all the kingdoms of the world and I can give them to you, Jesus did not dispute Satan's authority over all the kingdoms of the world. All right? But Jesus has said that he has overcome the world. And I think that implies everything in it.
Absolutely.
So we don't have to be afraid, and this is something I did for the Good News of the Day on Friday. It's something that I've studied a long time as a Christian, because there's stuff that I'm afraid of, and I always thought, I don't know if I need to be afraid of stupid, silly stuff as a Christian. There is a healthy fear, all right? A fear of God is one, and a fear of the power and the wily schemes of the enemy, that's another, you know, that's a healthy fear, but we don't have to go around trying to hide under our beds and being frightened of everything.
Absolutely not.
How many times does God say, fear not, do not be afraid in the Bible? I couldn't tell you, but it's a lot. And as Christians, we don't need to be afraid of these things. But at the same time, you know, we don't want to go around thinking that we're all that. And
right.
You know, hey, let's get into a rumble. I think you'll be on the losing end if you're going in with that kind of attitude.
You're battling with Hasatan, the deceiver.
Yeah.
That's what his title is. It's not his name, it's his title. And you're dealing with an angel who knows the end of the book, who is fallen,
mm-hmm.
who held the highest place in heaven next to God, and you're dealing with someone whose intelligence level is way above yours.
He's had a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Since, let's see, the beginning of time. But the point is, despite all of that, when you have Jesus Christ in your life, you're good. You're good to go.
That's right.
You cannot be overcome because Jesus Christ is in you.
That's
and,
right.
And that is a safe place to be. And if you've been listening to this tonight and you've been like, well, I'm looking for that spiritual path and Wicca sounds friendly and whatnot, let me just say
it's
that
not.
Jesus Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes unto God except through me. There is no other path. There's a lot of paths that go nowhere, but there's only one path that's going to get you anywhere, and that's to life. And as far as I can tell, most people want to live.
Most people do.
Yeah. The survival instinct, very strong in us.
Yeah, even evolutionists would agree with that.
Yeah, and you know what? God said to choose life. And so that's what kind of what we've put before you tonight. We talked a lot about Wicca. And let me tell you, and Tammy, you can chime in with this, as far as I've seen in my studies and my research so far as Wicca, witchcraft, paganism, and stuff goes, it is not life.
No, it is not. It claims to be a reverence for life. It claims to be a love of life. But in fact, it's a pathway to death.
There you go. You heard it straight from the person with the most experience, and that's what we want to leave you with tonight. If you're looking for life, there's only one place you're going to find it. If you're looking for a path to eternity where you can experience life for all of eternity, there's only one place you're going to find it. If you're looking for a life without contradiction, there's really only one place you're going to find it.
That's
in the
right.
Bible. Tammy, thank you so much for joining us tonight and talking about the stuff. I got a whole stack of notes and questions and stuff that we didn't even begin to scratch, but that's okay. I think we got through a lot of stuff tonight, and I hope it's been helpful to all of you. And
anytime.
With Halloween right around the corner, I appreciated how you handled that topic.
Sure. Can I give my email address?
Yeah, go ahead.
For anybody who has questions?
Absolutely.
It's TrapperTam, TrapperTam, @yahoo.com.
And if you also have questions about how can I experience true life, how can I get beyond the fear of all this evil spiritual stuff that's going around, how can I find security and peace and all those things that Christians seem to have, you can also email us here at M88, studio@m88.org. We'd be happy to talk with you and tell you how you can have life with Jesus Christ.
Or if you want to email me because you want to know how to witness to a witch that you know.
Which is something else we didn't get into.
Yep, just email me and give me the details, and I'll give you the best advice I can. Just keep in mind, I'm not perfect.
Well, few of us are. Actually, as far as I know, the book only says one was. Yep. That's going to wrap things up for tonight. Next week, it'll be another controversial Raw Talk as we talk about when is it too early to play Christmas music? When is it too early for Christmas? And we'll play a lot of Christmas tunes and get your opinion on that. And we'll also talk a little bit about should Christians even listen to Christmas music that doesn't focus on Christ? So that'll be next week, a fun holiday edition. And hope you'll come back and join us for that. Remember, you can catch this podcast on M88.org. Thanks for joining us for Raw Talk here on M88.